This is Classical IPR, a service of Interlochen Center for the Arts.
Brothers Anthony McGill and Damari McGill both have successful careers as orchestral musicians. Anthony McGill is the principal clarinetist with the New York Philharmonic, and Damari McGill is the principal flutist with the Seattle Symphony. They've both also played with the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra. The McGill brothers, along with pianist Michael McHale, have released a new album on the Chicago-based label Sedi. The album is called Portraits, and it features several world premieres. It's also the first album the McGill brothers have recorded together. I recently had the opportunity to talk with Anthony and Damari McGill about their new album, their relationships with the composers whose music is on the album, and what it's like being siblings in the world of classical music. Anthony McGill and Damari McGill, welcome to Interlochen Public Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, you were both campers here at Interlochen, and Anthony also attended the Interlochen Arts Academy for high school. Damari, you came here to Interlochen for camp first. So what brought you to Interlochen?
Well, I had heard about Interlochen forever, even prior to me attending the camp, and I always wanted to go, and was thrilled when I had the opportunity to go for my first summer. And at this point, it may be cliche because I've heard so many people say this, but Interlochen really, really changed my life. I'm forever grateful.
And then Anthony, you came a couple of years later as a camper, and then you stuck around and went to the academy for high school. What's it like to follow your brother?
Well, it was great. It was interesting. When my brother started going to the camp, I didn't play an instrument. And so for maybe at least two or three years, I was visiting the camp with my parents and dropping my brother off and then visiting during the summer. And, you know, I didn't know anything about the instrument except that, you know, my brother practiced the flute a lot and was really good at it. And so I would go to concerts. It was really great because I got to kind of see, okay, he really liked this place. And what was it about it that he liked? I didn't really know. So I, of course, was really curious. So I was, a little 11-year-old when I first went to Interlochen. So it was, and my brother was there, the big brother in the high school division, doing all these great things, winning concerto competitions and stuff. So it was pretty nice to have him to look up to and be proud of and talk to my cabin mates about and all of this stuff.
You're like, that's my brother.
Yes, exactly.
So how did you interact when you were here at the same time? Because you overlapped for one summer, right?
I didn't see you a lot.
No, I don't think we did.
I don't actually
interact.
Have any memories of that. I knew you were there.
I think I would see him on main camp because we all, you know, they were different. The little kids were across the street, you know.
Right.
I think maybe near the, is it still near the Intermediate Boys? Is the radio station?
Yeah.
In any case, so it would be, we were supervised. So whenever we went on main campus, it was either for specific events or specific concerts. So he would probably just see me kind of walking in a line full of, you know, intermediate boy campers and point and maybe wave.
Right.
Or he probably just ignored me the whole summer. I'm not sure how that happened.
We will never know.
So I'm curious. I mean, you both are just at the top of this really small competitive world of classical music, and at the same time as your sibling, but you play different instruments, so you're not exactly competing for the same spot. But I'm curious how you would describe your personal and professional relationships with each other in this world.
There's room in this classical music world, in this competitive classical music world, as you said. I mean, for both of us. So I mean, there's never been any reason to be competitive. I've never seen Anthony in an audition. I've always been proud of his successes and have been inspired by it. So I don't know, the idea of being competitive really doesn't exist in my mind. And even if he did play the same instrument, I think we would just be that much better. Because, I mean, there's when there's competition, I mean, the other side of that, there's inspiration.
Yeah, I think my mom, at some point when I after I started playing clarinet, I think I asked my mom if I could switch to the flute for some reason. I guess I really just wanted to do everything my brother did. And at some point I was probably like, I like the flute better than the clarinet. I don't know what happened there. But my mom said no, which was probably a great decision. But even like the, you know, when the Williams sisters are on the court trying to like knock the ball at each other at very fast speeds. I mean, you, at the end of the match, I mean, you know, love is thicker than family is thicker than music than a lot of other things. So, you know, that's unconditional. So they're like my brother said, we also totally play different instruments, and when we work together, we're just trying to work together for the best musical product. So if we suggest things that we do things differently or whatever, we both know that that's for a specific musical goal. You know, growing up, seeing my brother have so many successes only drove me forward and once again inspired me to try to practice more so I could by compete, I don't mean compete with him, I mean basically get up to his level as a younger brother. So that's the only drive I had as a kid.
So what was it like, you know, if you're both practicing at the same time growing up, I can't imagine what it sounded like at your house.
Let's see, I have to do the math here, but there weren't so many years where we were practicing aggressively and at the same time. If Anthony started when he started at 9, I was 13. I left when I was 16, about to turn 17. So, you know, we had a little over a few years of practice time together, which is not a lot of time. I mean, Anthony grew up listening to me practice for quite a while. And there, during that short window before I left for the Curtis Institute, we played a lot of duets. I really embraced the role as teacher. I mean, in hindsight, I can perhaps see it through Anthony's eyes, but at the time, I really cared about his musical well-being, and I had strong opinions about that, you know, and I really didn't hesitate to express those opinions. And I mean, you know, I mean, knowing having an idea of his perspective now, I wonder if I would do anything different, but it's not my personality, and he's the principal clarinetist at the New York Philharmonic.
True, you should take.
I'm not taking any credit for it, but let's just leave everything that happened in your life, including how I was as a kid, exactly the same.
Yeah, it didn't turn out poorly. I mean, I think we grew up in a household where, even with the way our parents were with us, it's not like they were so strict that we couldn't do anything, but. You know, they kind of demanded of us that if we were doing something, we try to do the best possible job at it. So I think even at some point, my brother, you tell me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. My brother told my dad not to comment about his music making, you know, not about your playing, you know, because my dad also would try to help and teach. And my brother was like, I'm the one taking music lessons here, you know. So I think I remember that happening. And yeah. So we come from a family where, you know, giving suggestions for improvement is like a good thing, a positive thing. So certainly it definitely helped my career path, but even before I had a career path, it helped my playing. So my brother probably really helped me get with the better teachers and get into the merit program and just really kind of start me off on the journey the right way.
So you said you played duets maybe just for a year or two before Damari went off to Curtis. You've each recorded multiple albums separately, but this is the first album that you two have made together. And I should mention, on this album, you two are two-thirds of the McGill-McHale trio with pianist Michael McHale. What made this the right project to record together?
you know, this was kind of, I think deep down it was a dream for both of us to do this. We just never had plans for it. We had never actively sought it out on nothing. And so fortunately, with my relationship with Sadie Records from a previous album with the Pacifica Quartet, I got to know Jim, and Jim supports Chicago artists. That's what the record company does, Sadie Records. And Jim and his board members immediately thought that the next thing they wanted to do was to present my brother and I. And we both said, oh, here we go. This is it. I mean, this is great. And, you know, he made that happen.
And as you said, Sadie is a Chicago-based label, so you're sort of the native sons coming home to record on the label. And Sadie can be pretty progressive, too, in terms of the rep that they record. In fact, one thing that's really striking about this album is every piece that's on it is either by a living composer or a new arrangement that's been created by a living composer. So I'm curious about what motivated those choices of rep to include on the album.
Just because of the this instrumentation, we were somewhat limited. I mean, to the type of works, the time period that we would feature. So a lot of the stronger works, the bigger works, are from composers that are living or you know, mid to late 20th century. But I liked, and, you know, I think I can speak for the trio, is that what I love about this album is that it's so personal for us. But because of the newness, you know, we have these living composers and living arrangers, there's a sense of, at least for me, nostalgia paired with unbelievable freshness. And I think that people without knowing that specifically can connect with that.
So what is it that makes it so personal that really brings out the sort of combination of nostalgia and freshness to you?
When we were putting together the program, sometimes the music that you choose reveals itself to be something that you have personal connections with as you're playing it. So The Portraits is a portraits of Langston Hughes, and we kind of grew up hearing about, you know, the great African-American heroes of the Harlem Renaissance and the writers that wrote all these beautiful, beautiful work, and having him in our minds as like a legendary figure. And then we're playing this music that when we perform, we connect with in so many different ways. As you'll hear if you listen to the piece, it has so many themes of like gospel themes, of bluesy themes, of spiritual sounds, you know, that come out of our instruments. And so we feel this personal connection with that, of course. But we have Michael, who did this beautiful arrangement of Lark in the Clear Air. And it's just, you hear the spirit of Ireland. I mean, we have the similar names, McGill, McHale, so that we thought that was very interesting, of course, and funny, and, you know, for audiences to hear and then to see us perform together. But, you know, it actually, it has native roots, you know, for all of us in this trio. Of course, my brother and I are family, but, you know, Michael joined kind of our family by being the third member of this trio. And, you know, music is universal.
And the piece that gives the album its name is The Portraits of Langston Hughes. It's a piece by Valerie Coleman. And this is the world premiere recording of this piece, correct?
Yes, it is.
There's a lot we could say about this piece, but it includes poetry of Langston Hughes, and then each movement is a reflection on a different poem. And the poems on the album are read by none other than Mahershala Ali, he just recently won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor. Was there a particular movement or section of this piece that maybe spoke to you more than others?
I can't say that there's a particular movement. I love the piece as a whole, partially because of the contrast. I mean, of course, the last movement is absolutely divine, but I think it's made more beautiful by some of the more agitated movements prior. So I think it's really, this piece, this work is absolutely golden. Valerie Coleman did a tremendous job. You know, I just experienced something very, very special. So I'm grateful to have been a part of this premiere recording.
And I'd add that I've heard from some people that say they heard the CD and they skipped over the narration portions and just listened to music. I would say that I would recommend that people don't do that. That because, you know, when you hear them together, that it only heightens the music and it heightens the overall work. And so when you hear the words and then the music comes right after, you understand it's like a great opera. You know, obviously they're not exactly together at the same time, but you know, there's something about that heightens the whole experience. And I personally like Silver Rain a lot and Harlem Nights. But yeah, like my brother said, it's hard to pick.
You said you've performed this together recently. I know Mahershala Ali recorded his part separately from you, but have you've performed it with him?
We performed the work very recently in Chicago with the wonderful singer Eric Owens, who brought so much to the
text.
Speaking
of opera.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're so grateful to have Ali on the recording. And it was just a tremendous pleasure to do this this work with such an incredible voice like Eric Owens.
Do you have relationships with composers whose music is on the album? I know Chris Rogerson made a special arrangement of A Fish Will Rise for your trio.
So I met Chris and heard of Chris through a conductor friend of mine, Giacomo, who conducts the Amarillo Symphony. And I was appearing with them months before this recording. Many months before, and he introduced me to Chris's music, and I heard it, and I fell in love with it. And there was another piece that Chris arranged for clarinet and orchestra, and I was thinking, you know, his music is so beautiful. I wonder if he could do an arrangement of something for this trio or write a new piece. But I didn't want to, you know, it was such a short time frame that I didn't want him to be rushed to write a new piece. But He thought this piece would work really well, and it really does. And I got to hang out with Chris and talk to him about it and everything when I was down in Amarillo. And, you know, he became a good friend. And Damari has known Valerie for many years, and I've known of her as well for many, many years. So there are personal connections for sure. We did not really get to meet and hang out with Paul Schoenfield, but we'd like to in the future. I think he was in contact with us along the way, but I think that's something that we look forward to meeting with him. We got comments from him about the recording during the process, so that was really helpful. It's so nice to know that the composer is there when you need help or you have questions. And it's my first recording where I've ever had that.
And we're also grateful that Michael McHale, our pianist, did some wonderful arrangements of Rachmaninoff's Vocalise and, you know, of the Irish works that we presented on the CD.
Yes, of the living composers and arrangers, those include Michael McHale, the pianist in your trio. You mentioned that that you had specific questions for the composer. What kinds of questions would those be?
Does it sound good?
I hope they said yes, or did they have suggestions?
Oh yeah. I mean, this is it's great. You know, when they're always specific questions about the notation as well, like like, how loud do you want this to be? Do you want, and when they have a marking in there and you're doing it and you're, but you're not doing it enough. I mean, that was something that Valerie was very clear about too. You know, she was like, you guys need to get in. When I say dirty in the part, it needs to be much dirtier, much more raucous. And, or, you know, you can play this with much more passion or dryness.
So Valerie Coleman gave instructions like dirty in her score. What are some other of the interesting instructions she gave?
Well, it was more we played for her, virtually played for her, you know, online. She listened to a rehearsal. She just wanted more of everything. She wanted more of whatever mood is supposed to be represented by a particular section in the piece, a particular movement. She wanted it just more exaggerated, which was fantastic.
Especially in the jazzy section.
Especially
specifically.
Yes. Yeah. She wanted us to sort of let go of our really fantastic classical training and just have fun with it. That was a comment that we heard a bunch.
Yeah, because you both are classically trained, and so to wear sort of a jazz hat in those pieces, what was that like?
Oh, it was great. You know, people ask me all the time if I play jazz, and I have to reluctantly tell them, no, I've been studying classical my whole life. That's how you do what
Mozart,
we do.
Yes.
You actually have to, you know, specifically study classical music in order to perform at a high level. So I always give them an explanation, but I love jazz. I try to improvise, but that's different than being a jazz player, like that performs in public. So to be able to play music that's written down that I can, you know, for a brief moment in time, feel like, you know, I can channel the great jazz clarinetists of our time. Is pretty awesome. So, you know, we try to do a good job, but the piece is a classical piece. It has tones of echoes of all kinds of different genres in it, though, you know, so it's important to kind of remember that.
The new album is called Portraits, and it features performances by the McGill-McHale Trio. You can read more about it on our website at classicalipr.org. Anthony McGill and Damari McGill, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today here at Interlochen Public Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.